My guest today is Carl Heitman, who is a licensed architect and the CEO of Heitman Architects. He has more than 30 years of experience in the design of corporate facilities. He designed the first LEED certified industrial building in Illinois for Anixter. And in 2016, he was awarded the Cornet Global Sustainable Leadership Award for the Methode Soap Factory, which was the first LEED Platinum manufacturing facility in the world. In this episode of the Office Space Podcast, Carl explores the concept of vertical farming and contemplates the adaptive reuse of an office building to a vertical farm. When we think about what we can do with some of the outdated office product, vertical farming could be a potential solution. I really didn't know anything about it until meeting Carl at a conference where he spoke about converting one of the downtown buildings to a vertical farm. Could this help revitalize the urban core? I hope you enjoy our discussion. Carl, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dougal. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So we met recently at an offsite event where the idea of vertical farming was brought up, and you seemed to be the only person in the room that had experience with this concept, and thought it was interesting to talk about for the listeners. And so I'd like to start with the basics, and if you could help describe what vertical farming is in its basic terms.
Be happy to, Dougal. I'm an architect and had not ever thought I'd be any kind of expert, and I don't think I am, but I've had a lot of experience now with vertical farming, and I'm happy to share what I know. We want to start out first by differentiating the word vertical farming, because there's maybe some misinterpreted terminology. There's urban agriculture, which I think is the main topic. How do we bring farming or sustenance growing into the cities? That's urban farming, and that's farm to table, next day consumption would be another thing that we talk about. So these facilities that are moving into the urban areas for agriculture and farming, they can provide next day consumption, farm to table. Vertical farming implies indoor under LED, typically, where you're in a dark space and you've got LED as a grow light source. But there are other ways to do it. There's horizontal farming, which would be under greenhouse, utilizing sunlight for the light source. There are the terms that we want to understand. One is be hydroponic. A lot of this urban farming is in a hydroponic system. And hydroponic would be a water-based nutrient system that's either in planter trays or floating pads in a tank where the plants are planted in the water-based or hydroponic tanks. There's also aquaponics. And aquaponics is a hydroponic system that has a nitrate fertilizer, natural nitrate fertilizer base. Usually it's maybe a tilapia fish in a tank. And the tilapia fish actually support in a symbiotic way the plants in a hydroponic system because they provide natural fertilizer through the nitrates produced. There's another system that's called aeroponics. And aeroponics would be maybe a vertical tube that doesn't have a hydroponic wet source, but it has a misting. The nutrients are misted into the plant from or into the root system, and there's no real tanks involved. So that'd be maybe some terms we'd want to clarify so we start to understand what's involved with vertical farming.
Okay. And has it been going on for a while? I know you've been involved with different levels of urban farming, but as far as this vertical farming movement, has it been happening for a while in the States, overseas?
It's been happening quite a bit in Europe, in the Netherlands areas, where they really have to turn to indoor farming to provide sustenance. So a lot of the technology that we're seeing and using today is coming out of the Netherlands. You know, it's been around for a while. I don't know if you remember, Kaidu, as a kid with a chemistry set, we used to play with hydroponic growing systems. Epcot down in Florida, you know, they've got a display of hydroponic greenhouses, which are very cool. But I think those are all pointing to the future. And I think the future is now. So we're seeing that really being a part of, I think, what we're going to see moving forward with the global food sourcing.
Okay. And how'd you get involved in this particular area of, you know, if you call it architecture or agriculture, where I guess where the two meet, how'd you get engaged?
Well, we It's a great question. We're really my practice, I focused on technology and also sustainability. So those two factors are what I kind of focused on. And I had the opportunity to work with Method Soap Factory. It's a soap production facility for Method Soap in the Pullman District in South Chicago. The founder, Adam Lowry, visionary founder, he wanted to do something with a building that was beyond LEED. So our first interview with Adam, he came in and he asked me, well, Carl, what's beyond LEED? And we talked about what a regenerative building is. Regenerative building would be a building that creates more energy than it uses, produces clean water more than it uses. It becomes a living building. So there's a living building category that's kind of beyond LEED that I think we'll be looking and seeing and hearing more about in the future. But Adam Lowry wanted to give back to the community. And being in the south side of Chicago, which is a food desert, he thought that putting a greenhouse on the roof of that building would be a great idea. So as we designed that project, Method entered into a partnership with Gotham Greens, who leases the factory roof to produce food. And that factory roof, it's about a 75,000 square foot greenhouse. It's fully automated. We've since worked with Gotham Greens beyond the Method facility, which was the first we were involved with. They had four other facilities in New York, but we basically entered into a partnership and we've worked with them on multiple markets across the U.S., over a dozen facilities totaling over 1.1 million square feet. And they're all very highly productive and they're all set near urban areas. It also led to work with a vertical farm group using LED lights inside dark buildings called Farmed Here. Farmed Here was a vertical farm group that was, I think, working. We worked with them locally in Chicago. We looked at places, Austin and Louisville, Kentucky as well. Different system, vertical grower. We also were the architect for a company called LGM. We were the successful bidder for the Cook County cannabis growing facility. So cannabis growing is not what we focus on, but that's a similar facility. All the technology that you're seeing in these new cannabis growing facilities are what's being used in the leafy green food production facilities.
Great. And I think when we were, the function we were at, there was discussion about the LaSalle Street reimagination, and there was one particular property that was discussed. I think it was 30 North LaSalle. From your opinion, taking a building like that in the city of Chicago, what are the must-haves that it would need, require in order to become a vertical farm as opposed to an office building? You talked about some of the things that OSA already has as far as an infrastructure, but can you talk about the kind of the environment around it that needs to happen as well?
Yeah, it was quite an exciting discussion. Lee Golub is looking at how he can make those office buildings more productive. And the fact of introducing a vertical farm in an office building in the central business district was very exciting to me. I got pretty excited because I hadn't really thought about that. There is a synergy between existing structures that you'd find in the warehouses or even office buildings. They're built for a lot of loading, and the idea of creating a mixed-use environment where you're taking the producer, which would be the grower of edible food, and connecting them with the consumer. That's a very sustainable notion, and I think that's where things are headed. What has to happen in these buildings in the city is really you have to get the benefits of scale, and it has to be scalable. We're not talking about having growing beds in your backyard. These have to be really operations are fully automated. The Gotham Greens facilities are fully automated. They're use of minimum labor. A lot of it's robotic. A lot of it's not touched by hand at all. So to get it to be more of a productive asset, it has to be really a machine for growing food. And that's the kind of thing that we're seeing developing in Northern Europe. And that's what we're developing with Gotham Greens. They're using about 10% of the water that's traditionally used in in-ground farming. They're only using about 10% of the energy that's used for a traditional in-ground farming. And they have about 8 growing seasons per year because they're not outside subject to the climate. So you're indoors, you control the climate, and you're getting about 8 growing seasons per year. So that really extends the food product. And then again, when it's located in the urban areas, there's very zero food waste because it eliminates all the distribution channels that traditionally happen when you grow food, like in California, and you have to ship it to Chicago. It would take maybe 3 weeks. You're probably passing through maybe 3 or 4 distributors' hands. And by the time it gets to your grocery shelf, it has a shelf life of maybe 1 week, 2 weeks at the most. So there's a lot of food waste in that system. And not to mention the food miles, meaning a lot of people think the waste is really in the shipping and the food and the carbon that's emitted from the shipping to get it here. But really it's in the loss of the product. When you grow it next to where you consume it, it's got an extended shelf life, either in the store or if it's next day in your refrigerator, it's going to be a 5-6 week shelf life versus having produce wilted within a week. So there's a lot of advantages. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So looking at water, it only uses 10% of what a traditional farming water or farm would need. How is that? How does that play out?
That's correct. It doesn't seem logical, does it? But when you're working with a hydroponic system, the water is contained. So the water is there's a lot of water. You think there's a lot of water, but you're in very small trays and the water is recycled. So it's not like dropping a lot of water irrigation into a farm field where the earth is soaking it up and a lot of the water just goes down to the aquifer and doesn't get into the root body of the plant. In a hydroponic system, the water is really in a contained system, and any water loss is really through minor evaporation or basically feeding the plant. So the water use is one very important item in terms of sustainability for an urban farm.
Very interesting. So I'm trying to visualize this, Carl, help me. You've got a, you know, call it a 32, you know, floor building in the central loop. Are you, you know, creating holes in the core for this vertical farming, or would you keep the floors the way they are? What would this vertical farm look like?
Well, I think vertical farms indoors, like the application we're talking about in Chicago, it could work a couple different ways. And one way is a vertical, basically a vertical structure. And the plants are on trays, if you will, that are, they revolve. They go up to the 32-foot clear, or the 24-foot clear, or 11-foot clear, if you have that in an office building. And then they come back down. So they're cycling up and down. And you're basically working the plant on one level. So you're planting it on the way up and you're harvesting it on the way down. That's one way that works. Another way, in an office building that has maybe a 12-foot, 13-foot floor-to-floor height, would be to create these cells that run horizontally, and they're gravity-fed. So you might have a tray system that is along, like maybe 150-foot long, the length of the building, and you plant it on one end, and then it's gravity-fed down to the other end where you harvest it. So the plant is under LED lights the entire time, and it's matured when it makes its way across the building. And that's similar to the way the Gotham Greens roof works. We plant the seedlings are planted on the south end of the building, and they're in a conveyor system that takes 38 days to get it across to the north end of the building, where that tray is then gets on a conveyor. The conveyor moves it around to where the plants are cut and harvested. And then they're planted by robots, and they come back around to the south face of the building, start their path all over again. So the growing cycle is about a 38-day cycle, and these systems are automated, so they're moving from one side of the building to the other.
Any sense of the economics of a project of this scale, this hypothetical project we're talking about? I mean, it's hard enough for local farmers to survive against the corporate farm community. So how does your organization, I mean, Gotham Greens, I know they've got a lot of private equity behind them. Are they making money? Are they doing well?
Well, their goal off the bat was they had to be a for-profit operation. They were not looking at government subsidies at all, and they had to create a system that was basically for-profit. I think that's the way it has to work. It works with the scale of it, and I think the investment in terms of the hardware and the buildings, et cetera, I guess a pretty high investment, but the payoff has got to be there within a period of payback. The one thing that I learned working with Gotham Greens is that about 10 or 15 years ago, the tomato industry went through this same sort of transition. So tomatoes that we eat today are usually grown indoors, not outdoors. So the tomato industry made that transition about 10 years ago. And the people in the business think the leafy vegetables are going to be making that transition right now. I think it'll be just a matter of time before all of our food will be grown indoors in local supply sources. That's really the sustainable thing to do. And that really fits with the universal trend, the global trend in connecting suppliers to consumers. So when you think about all that's saved, the energy, the water, the shipping, distribution networks, and then the food waste, it's really got to paint a very profitable picture.
Yeah. Is there anything unique about Chicago in particular that could set it up to be on the forefront of this?
Well, I think the perfect storm with what's going on with the office market and the the downturn and working from home, et cetera, and the fact that I think the population is transitioning to urban centers. We're going to see, I guess, in the next 20 to 50 years, most of our populations are going to move to dense urban centers. And I think the fact that you could produce food and become self-sufficient within a city context, and you're within a quarter mile of the consumer, all producers within a quarter mile of consumers, that's a really good thing. And I think that's probably what we will be seeing in the near future. And I think Chicago could be a leader in that trend.
My wife and I were at a farmer's. We were downtown this way. I live in the suburbs. We were downtown over the weekend, and we walked a farmer's market. And we just, with kids and stuff, we generally don't get out to the farmer's market where we are. But it was kind of neat to be in a downtown in a really nice farmer's market, getting everything you needed. And in my mind, that's what this is, right? It's all right there for you. It's all walkability. You live around the corner from this quote unquote farm and you pick up what you need, and less cars, less transportation, less pollution, better quality food potentially.
Yeah, Dougal, it could be more than that. In fact, I don't know if you've belonged to like a community's farmer's market. My son in Kansas City belonged to one, and part of what they did on a monthly basis, they actually, to be part of this co-op, they worked the farm. So one other aspect of this is to be close to and actually maybe participate in the growing of your own food. That's really interesting in terms of learning experience, but to be able to have maybe a retail outlet where you have like a farmer's market on the ground floor retail, which is all walkable, and then right above that, you could actually participate in the planting or the harvest of that food. As a co-op, that's a really interesting idea. It's great to know where everything comes from. We live in a world today where we don't know where anything comes from. You know, we're sourcing globally, and to get back to the basics of understanding where your food comes from is a very important thing.
Yeah, that's great. So are there any other unique ideas out there that you've seen for adaptive reuse of office buildings specifically?
Well, because we're in the architecture market, I've been doing a lot of work with concept buildings of what maybe our world might look like in the next 50 years. And I work with a lot of manufacturers, a lot of suppliers. So I pretty much understand the global supply chain. And I think the trend will be with connecting the suppliers with the consumers, I think will be the trend. And we're looking at concept buildings where we actually bring manufacturing. It's called, just-in-time manufacturing is, but this is manufacturing on demand. So manufacturing on demand is where you might go to the internet, order a pair of shoes, a certain size, a certain color, certain attributes. And that goes to a manufacturing facility that's within a quarter mile of where you live. And that shoe is produced within 15 minutes and you can pick it up. And that sounds like science fiction, but the technology for that all exists today. And I think it will eliminate having to buy and ship goods from across the world and store them in warehouses so that you can have them next day. I think the trend will be to create more mixed use facilities within the urban centers. And I think that would be connecting manufacturing to housing, food production to housing. And I think through the technology that we see today, you could have vertical manufacturing buildings that are laced within the city that produce upon demand, eliminating all of the inventory that we have to carry for most of the internet transition, online shopping that we have today. I don't think we're going to go backwards. We like the convenience of that. But I think what it'll move to is towards a manufacturing on demand.
Got it. Well, a little off topic, but considering we're talking about futurist concepts, AI, where do you see that fitting into any of this?
Well, that's a great question, Dougal. The AI, I think, is going to create situations where we don't have to order products, that the AI is going to understand what our consumption rates are. One of the things I'm really interested in right now is, what are our consumption rates? We have out of control consumption that drives a lot of the products and the supply chain globally that we're dealing with. That is very hard to sustain. I mean, how far can you go with this? So I think AI will help to understand consumption practices. I've heard a lot of technology talking about, you've got a sensor in your refrigerator and it knows when you're down to two eggs, and before you run out of eggs, you've got somebody delivering eggs to your front door. And that can happen with everything that we consume, from toilet paper to what clothing, whatever we have. So I think you're going to see that predictive consumption practices will start to help link the producer and the consumer in ways it was very hard for us to imagine today.
Lots to think about. Well, I appreciate your time and your thoughts on all these points. This is new territory for me. And I think a lot of the things we talked about here today are probably new ideas for some of the listeners on this podcast. So I'll have links to your firm, Heitman Architects, on the show notes. And then if there's anything else we want to include, we'll have that as well. But Carl, appreciate your time.
Well, Dougal, I am really excited about the future, and I can see a lot of this technology will really change the way we live, and it will all be, I think, in a very good way. It'll all be very sustainable and friendly to the limited resources we have on the earth, and I think it's a pretty exciting future, and I think we're going to see it. It's going to happen very fast.
So the robots aren't going to get us. We're going to be okay?
I think the robots are going to save us.
Good. We'll end on that note. All right, Carl. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, bud.
Take care. Bye.
Life has come a long way since yesterday. I say, and it's not the same old